I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, America, love it or leave it. That was the retort hurled at protesters during the 1960s and 70s who were demanding the end of the Vietnam War, the end of Jim Crow. They wanted women's rights, gay rights, and disability rights. But here's another slogan, America, love it and improve it. That's the spirit of patriotic protest and dissent. Today's patriots are taking back to the streets, demanding constitutional oversight of the president, the restoration of free markets with the end of punitive tariffs and the end of crypto corruption and more. We're going to hear about the rich history of patriotic protest and dissent in America. You have a right to voice your outrage. Even more so, you have a duty to voice your outrage and demand more from the country that you love. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
From the John L. Santico Studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Dissent is the highest form of patriotism. It's a quote that's been often attributed to Thomas Jefferson, but there's no evidence that he actually dropped that penny. But it is certain that America was born in dissent. Protests just don't appear on the margins in our national story. It is the spark that created the country itself, from the Boston Tea Party to abolition, from suffrage to civil rights, from Stonewall to Black Lives Matter. The United States has been pushed, challenged, and reshaped by people who refused to accept the status quo. They demanded justice. Historian Ralph Young has spent his career studying America's dissenters, the celebrated figures and the overlooked ones. His new book is American Patriots, A Short History of Dissent. Reexamines four centuries of protest and argues that dissent is not the opposite of patriotism. It is patriotism, a demand that the nation live up to its own ideals. This updated edition revisits the entire tradition of dissent from today's political turmoil firmly in view. It includes a new preface on the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, an event Young argues was not legitimate protest, and we're going to get into that later. The book also asks the urgent questions about the growing force of white supremacy, the boundaries of free speech, how we distinguish dissent from sedition, especially when we're dealing with an administration today that does not recognize dissent as legitimate. There is also a story of hope here of ordinary Americans, from Ida B. Wells to members of SNCC and ACT UP, who risked everything to make this country better. Their dissent changed laws, expanded rights, and reshaped what democracy means. Today in The Source, we explore the long, complicated, inspiring, and sometimes dangerous history of American dissent as we ask what defines a patriot. We're joined by Ralph Young, author of American Patriots, A Short History of Dissent. And Ralph, welcome to The Source.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
What distinguishes dissent from disloyalty? What makes dissent critical for America?
Well, dissent, of course, is something that the founding fathers, the framers of the Constitution, put into the First Amendment of the Constitution. And they realized that dissent was really the force that gave birth to the United States. Dissent is, in the American tradition. It even begins before the United States is formed. You had, Puritan dissenters like Roger Williams, pushing for separation of church and state and freedom of religion. You had in the 18th century, you had newspaper publishers like John Peter Zanger pushing for freedom of the press, and basically establishing these ideas even before the United States went into the revolution against the British Empire. And then once the revolution was over and the country was being formed, the founders put this right to dissent into the Constitution, into the First Amendment, and Americans basically, haven't shut up since. They've been protesting everything. Women wouldn't have got the right to vote without protesting for it. Slavery would not have come to an end without the abolitionist movement. workers fought for the right to unionize. You had later in the 20th century the civil rights movement. You've had, you know, the gay rights movement, environmentalism, so many things. And but mostly what dissenters are doing is they are believing very deeply in the founding documents, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution. And frequently dissenters, when they're protesting, they're quoting from these documents to push for rights. And what they're saying is that the United States has committed themselves to this idea about all men are created equal and that everybody's equal before the law. And they basically are pushing the United States to live up to what it put down in paper. In fact, Martin Luther King even mentioned this in his last speech, his, you know, I've been to the mountaintop speech. He says that all we are saying to America is to be true to what you put down on paper.
So on this conversation, we're not able to take calls today. This is pre-recorded. But if you want to participate in a conversation about dissent and patriotism, we are having a live in-person event on Wednesday, November 19th at 5 p.m. at La Tuna Ice House. This is a community conversation that will explore what it means to love your country by questioning its authority and demanding more of your country. And what is patriotism? So that will be on Wednesday at 5 p.m. at La Tuna Ice House. I'll be there with a bunch of other people. We'll be having a really interesting conversation, and come join us. Dissent does bring about conflict. Can you have dissent without conflict?
Well, you know, dissent is basically, it's pushing against the status quo. And if people are feeling that their rights that have been, you know, promised to them, that they're going to be guaranteed by the Constitution, oftentimes people are pushing to get their full share of the rights. And then there are people that push back against this, that perhaps want to maintain the status quo. Maintain the privilege of their class or their gender. And this is something that dissenters find all the time. It's very difficult sometimes to push against these established procedures. Dissent is also kind of an interesting thing. One of my students once made the analogy that dissent is like a process of almost like a geological process where waves are hitting upon the shore, and the shore is sort of like the established way of doing things, and they're pushing against the rocks, as it were, and finally it turns them into sand, and you create a new assumption that people make that, you know, yes, everybody does deserve these rights. And so dissenters are kind of pushing to get people to become more educated about the problems that the people that are dissenting are facing.
Well, the problem with that comparison is that if you're talking about geologic time,
yes,
it's a long time to wait for the weathering of rocks. Right. So people, we want change now, don't we?
Well, remember in Bob Dylan's song, Blowing in the Wind, he says, how many years can a mountain exist before it's washed to the sea? How many years can
it's a lot. The answer is a lot.
Right. And so it's kind of making, it's an exaggeration, of course, but it's pointing out that, people have been waiting a long time for basic rights, and, why can't we have them now?
We shall overcome someday. But,
right.
Someday, right. Why can't it be today or tomorrow? Why do we have to have protest and dissent and other ways of showing our dissatisfaction with the government when they're doing things that are unjust, and have this sort of passive attitude?
Right. And of course, one of the things with the civil rights movement, the anthem at the beginning really is we shall overcome someday. But it really began to turn into freedom now as kind of the watchword, the slogan that was used.
It certainly ticked off the establishment, as they used the term back then, immediately. So if you're looking for something that I guess the results aren't immediate all the time, but you do see the irritation, as we do now with this administration, when people do stand up and they demand something different. So we're going to take a break here. We're going to continue our conversation about patriotism and dissent with Ralph Young, author of American Patriots, A Short History of Dissent, right after this. Stay with us.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about patriotism, but in the framework of the, quote, dissent is the highest form of patriotism. What does dissent look like? How is that the highest form of patriotism, particularly when some people have that idea, it's America, love it or leave it. But history tells us something different, particularly American history and how America was crafted by dissent. We're speaking with Ralph Young. He is the author of America Patriots, A Short History of Dissent. So let's talk about January 6th. The argument justifying the insurrection has been that these were Americans exercising their constitutional right to protest. But you disagree. Tell me more.
Yeah, well, this is one of the reasons why I wrote this book, is that after January 6th, when a lot of politicians on both sides of the aisle began to justify the invasion of the Capitol as just, you know, normal Americans exercising their right to dissent. And it made me rethink, in many ways, my definition of dissent. And I've always felt that, you know, dissent is going against the grain. It's going against whatever that is. And it can come from both, you know, the left and the right, or be even no-wing dissent rather than left-wing or right-wing. But one of the things about it is that even if dissent is going against what is, it's something that struck me that what were the founding fathers thinking when they put the right to dissent into the Constitution? And what I was thinking, you know, remember the United States, when it was founded, was an experiment in a Republican form of government. And most Americans at that time were very wary of establishing something that we had a monarch or a king or a dictator leading us. And Americans were afraid that this could, you know, infringe on basic rights. And so when they put this into the Constitution, I think they were not necessarily thinking of championing protest that would enhance the power of the few at the expense of the many. They were not validating protesting for causes that jeopardize democracy or natural rights. They were only validating dissent that would actually expand democracy, that would expand what the Constitution is. And also they were thinking that we want the people to sign on to this. And to so in order to do that, to make them feel comfortable with it, we want to make sure that they know that we are going to protect their rights, their constitutional rights, and their basically their human rights. And so this was a lot of the, you know, the thinking, I think, of what the founders were saying. They weren't advocating the right to dissent that would go against the Constitution. They were advocating the right to dissent that would support and enhance and strengthen the Constitution.
So the distinction is that a legitimate dissent would be strengthening rights, strengthening the Constitution. But what we saw on January 6th were a group of people who were attacking the Capitol, who were trying to overturn an election and basically overturn the Constitution. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and basically what it was, they were actually protesting for a lie. They were told that the election was a fraud, that it was, you know, undermined, and so they thought maybe they were protesting against something that was taking their rights away from them. But they were really believing that the election was stolen. And so they were fighting against something that did not exist. You know, it kind of reminds me of like Don Quixote fighting the windmills. And they also were, they had this distorted view of American history by carrying, you know, their Don't Tread on Me flags and the Confederate battle flags and conflating dissent and peaceful assembly with sedition and treason. And so they, you know, they were pushing against something that didn't exist. It was, they were fighting a chimera. And so, you know, I really began, that made me think so much about, well, what are the founding fathers thinking when they put the right to dissent? And dissent can come from any political persuasion as long as it's basically something that is supportive of the Constitution, of trying to expand rights. Most dissent movements that have been created in the United States, whether it was the women's movement or the civil rights movement, wound up creating their own dissent movement against them. For example, when women's suffrage became was beginning to become more successful, you wound up getting an anti-suffrage movement. Even back during the American Revolution, as the Patriot cause was expanding and getting more and more adherence to it, you wound up getting loyalists fighting back against the Patriots.
And they were loyal to the king, to Britain.
Loyal to the king, loyal to Britain, yes. Remember, you know, John Adams once commented that at the time of the Revolution, only about a third of the people were in favor of separating from Britain. Another third were thinking that these dissenters are crazy. You know, like, why would we want to leave the most powerful empire in the world? And then another third of Americans couldn't care less. They were apathetic about the whole thing. And, you know, one of the things that dissenters are trying to do is get the people who are on the fence or are not involved or apathetic, they're trying to get them involved in it.
So dissent is a persuasion campaign by having a protest, like we had the No Kings protest across the country. Right. It provided a media optics for all these people showing up, expressing their outrage, claiming that Donald Trump is using unlawful powers to expand the executive branch and undermining our democracy. Mm-hmm. But if there wasn't a protest, then we'd have a big chunk of the population thinking, well, it must be okay then, right?
If there were, right. You know, that one of the things that protests are trying to do is to raise the issue, to get it into everybody's consciousness. And, you know, a thing about protests also is when you, you know, the protest itself really doesn't change anything. But what it does is it gives a platform to get the argument out there that, hey, look, if we let this keep going on the way it is, then this is what's going to happen from that. And we want to prevent that. This is, you know, like with the No Kings protest. Other protests are trying to, you know, alert or educate the American people to, hey, there's a real problem here. You know, a lot of people are suffering because of this particular situation, whether it's the Jim Crow laws in the South or, you know, other aspects of, you know, the status quo. So it's something that, you know, it's really, I think of it in some ways as partly you're trying to educate people, you're trying to get people to be aware that there is a problem, and then you're trying to persuade them that you have a good argument for this, that this is a problem and that you need to be part of it. You know, as Martin Luther King once said, you know, when justice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So,
yeah. The administration used language to describe the No Kings protest, saying it was un-American. They were saying that it wasn't patriotic and that these were people who were trying to destroy America. Those were words that were used.
Well, I think it's just the opposite. These are people who are trying to save America to be the America that it purports to be, that we have to create a reality in this country that really coincides with the promise of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Remember, in some ways, think of those documents as a contract. The United States was formed on these basic principles, and we are guaranteeing this to everybody who resides in this country, to all American citizens. And so this is, just the, and what dissenters are doing is trying to say to the, to the establishment, hey, you signed this contract. You're not living up to your side of the bargain of protecting our rights. And, we need to push the United States to be the United States. And so I think that is, as patriotic as you can get.
I guess pushing back on people who call things like the No Kings protest as unpatriotic or un-American or destructive to the United States, is it important to kind of link that to the tradition of dissent and protest that we have in the United States to show that dissent defines America's character?
Yeah. Well, the thing is that, every time people have protested, there have been those who claim that they're being un-American or unpatriotic. Un-American is kind of a more recent term that people use since really the 60s. And there's always that, America, love it or leave it. But the reason why people are protesting is, they're not going to leave it. They love it. They do love the country. They're just saying that, the United States is no longer living up to its own ideals.
You said several times that the right to dissent is in the Constitution, but it's not enumerated in the Constitution. So look, I guess you're looking at things like our freedom of speech, right to assembly, free press. These are things that make up dissent.
Yeah. Well, kind of that's sort of the 18th century way of saying dissent and protest is that, a peaceable assembly to for redress of grievances. And grievances are that their rights are not being, guaranteed or protected. And so that's a legitimate grievance. And of course, they're not advocating violent dissent. They're advocating peaceable dissent. But of course, there have been many occasions in the United States where dissent has turned violent. And for example, the American Revolution is one of those. I mean, the protests against the Stamp Act and the boycotts and all of these various things that were happening, the British response to it was basically escalating the whole issue. And so you wind up with the Boston Tea Party, and then eventually shots are fired at Lexington and Concord. And so dissent, when it gets to a certain point, it can wind up becoming revolution.
What do you see? What do you look at as a strong example of dissent that worked in the United States?
Well, the women getting the right to vote, the civil rights movement. There were many, gay rights. These things have, and sometimes it takes a long time. Like when women started, Abigail Adams back in 1776 wrote her husband John Adams, pleading with him in the new code of laws that you create. Please don't, remember the ladies. Don't forget about us, or else we will foment a revolution against you. That was in 1776. She wrote that, and it took until 1920 before women got the right to vote. And still that didn't, create a level playing field. So dissent often takes a long, long time to accomplish its goals. In more recent years, I guess with the speeding up of our whole society and with, television and then later the internet and the computers, things have sped up a bit. I mean, the civil rights movement didn't take quite as long as the women's movement. And certainly with gay rights, that is something that, it starts in 1969 in a big way. And by the, about 10, 15 years ago, the the Supreme Court decision legalizing same-sex marriage. That's, you know, pretty quick turnaround for people to get more supportive of the gay rights movement.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about patriotism and dissent. We're having this conversation on tape today. It's not live, but we will have a live conversation at La Tuna Ice House on Wednesday at 5 p.m. We invite you to come in and help discuss, like, what is productive dissent and what does it mean to challenge and question the authority of your country in a positive, patriotic way. We're taking a break here. We will come back with more of our conversation with Ralph Young, author of American Patriots, A Short History of Dissent. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
A donation comes in many forms: a sustaining membership, a one-time gift, even a home, land, or commercial property. Donating property is a great way to give back, and you may even claim a tax deduction. Get the process started today. Call 844-277-HOME or visit tpr.careasy.org/realestatedonation.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Our guest today is historian Ralph Young. He's the author of the book American Patriots, A Short History of Dissent. The book is a powerful reminder that protest is not a threat to America. It's one of the engines that drives it forward. So you would think that people, Ralph, know this fact, that dissent is an important part of America. But yet we do see people who push back on dissent, people who say that protest is not productive. And so do people just have compartmentalized the history of dissent, like the Boston Tea Party, and not see dissent as something that is useful today?
Yeah, there's, you know, a lot of people don't really fully understand the vast scope of American history and the positive things, the negative things. There's so many different things. The United States has always been a work in progress. You know, when we wrote the ideas about all men are created equal, you know, when Jefferson wrote that in the Declaration of Independence, he did not mean everybody was equal. You know, he really meant just white men who owned property, and certainly not women or people of color and or slaves, or, you know, people who were enslaved. So, but basically, the whole history of the United States is the expansion of that phrase, that all men are created equal, means something bigger today than it did back then. And protesters have been the one that have been pushing the United States to live up to that ideal. So you have to think of the United States as, in some ways, it's, you know, it has always been a work in progress. The, equality, freedom, liberty, these things have been expanding throughout the years. Now, you almost always have people that want to resist change. You know, think back to the 1920s when there was so much change right after World War One with the Model T Ford and road construction and, you know, building of suburbs and such, and new ideas. You know, Freud's ideas, Darwin's ideas were really becoming popularized in the 1920s. And you had a lot of people really very excited about the United States was moving into a new modern type of future. And there were just as many people that were digging in their heels and saying, no, we don't want to go there. And so what happens in the 1920s, I think, is the beginning of these culture wars, kind of epitomized with the Scopes trial in 1925, you know, fighting against the idea of evolution. And so in so many ways, the 2020s is kind of a recap of all of this, where we're having these culture wars that there are a lot of people that want to move in one direction, and a lot of people are digging in their heels and trying to go back into a different direction. So you have, every time people begin protesting about something, it almost always generates its own protest. Think back to the ending of the Civil War in 1865 with the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, and slavery is abolished in the United States. That same year, you have the birth of the Ku Klux Klan, which in one way were dissenting against this new reality of the United States. They were dissenting against a slave-free society. But of course, you know, is that legitimate dissent? Because they're just trying to go back to reestablish the times of white supremacy.
And they're using violence. They're hooded and delivering that violence, these Knight Riders, terrorizing people, and they were using terror as a weapon. Mm-hmm. So does that immediately disqualify it as dissent and make it sedition or make it terror?
Yeah. Well, it did become terror, and the Klan still represents that. And what it is, to me, that's not legitimate dissent, because it's trying to overturn what the dissenters who were pushing for more equality, more liberty, more freedom, trying to overturn that and go back to sort of the dark ages before the Civil War.
Oh, and then they passed laws, anti-KKK laws, and they established a Justice Department, a President Grant did, deliberately to respond to the reign of terror from the Ku Klux Klan. And so with the idea that, okay, I am violating the law, that delegitimize dissent because there are unjust laws, as Martin Luther King would have pointed out, that need to be challenged and need to be broken. So how does the law fit into dissent?
Well, it goes back not only to Martin Luther King, but it goes back even earlier to Henry David Thoreau in his essay on civil disobedience, where he's saying that, you know, any law that justifies you doing something wrong to somebody else, like, for example, the Fugitive Slave Act, which people in Massachusetts were really upset about.
Or make it a more current example, what's happening with ICE today, taking people, hardworking people, some of them are American citizens, using very violent tactics against them in the street and detaining them, that we're seeing that all around us all the time.
Right, and ICE is somewhat hooded, as it were. They're all wearing masks so that they can't be identified. That kind of is reminiscent of the Klan. And
there are a lot of people trying to protest against them, trying to record them, document their actions. And, you know, they end up finding themselves on the wrong end of a baton.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of them are looking at these new immigration laws, as it were, or this crackdown on immigration as illegitimate. And, going against the American grain. I mean, the United States has always, argued that, we're the greatest nation because everybody's free and equal. And then you get so many people in this country, disliking immigrants who believe that the United States is the greatest. And that's why they're coming here, because they want to be free and equal. And there are some people that are, oppose that, even though they're the first ones to say that we are the greatest nation on earth. And then they get upset because other people are coming into the country believing what these Americans say about us being the greatest.
And they're
country.
Following the law, they're working hard, they're paying their taxes, and right. yet they've been demonized and wrapped up into this mass deportation dragnet. So people see that as an injustice.
Yes.
And they say, okay, no more of this. We should change the law to have some sort of immigration reform, yet that's not something that's obtainable now due to gridlock in Washington, D.C. So dissent on that policy, on that problem that we have in America, why aren't we seeing dissent there finding traction, making change?
Well, it... Yeah, that's a good question. There is a immense gridlock going on in Washington. You have two parties that are so adamantly opposed to each other, and yet also you have a situation where it is clear that the current administration is flaunting all of the kind of basic, not so much rules as, you know, the way American politics has worked. You know, there have been elections, and every single time the president, the outgoing president, you know, accepts, you know, if it's a new president, you know, from the other party coming in, you have, you know, there's this acceptance of what the will of the people is. And with what's been going on now, you have one party that, you know, seems to be, you know, so intimidated by the president that they are unwilling to challenge any of the norms that have been violated.
So the Democrats, leader of the Democratic Party, have been very feckless.
Yeah. Well, the
and they haven't really the dissent that we see in America is not being driven by party politics. It's basically coming from grassroots, which is actually, and as you write about, where dissent should come from. It should come from the bottom up.
Yeah. Well, there have been occasions where dissent, like, you know, has been from the top. Like Margaret Chase Smith, the Republican senator in 1952, took on McCarthy, and, you know, who was a member of her own party, and challenged him that what he was doing was just destroying people and going, you know, being un-American in his, zest to uncovered communists within the State Department, for example. But and you do have, you know, other times when, you know, people that are in authority have, you know, pushed with, you know, the protesters and gone against, you know, and worked with them. But generally speaking, most dissent is kind of a grassroots thing. And but
I mean, particularly it was with labor, the Haymarket.
Yeah.
You know, you have some leaders who spring up who Abby Hoffman, people like that, they are propelled forward by a group of people that agree with them.
Yeah. And even like, you know, within the civil rights movement, you have, you know, Martin Luther King and John Lewis and Malcolm X and so many others that have been, you know, really well known. But for every one of those, there's 1,000 or more, you know, ordinary people that have been committed and pushing in within those movements. And so it takes leadership, but it also takes the masses to get behind it.
We're taking a break. We're going to continue our conversation with Ralph Young, author of American Patriots, A Short History of Dissent. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We'll be right back.
Need to get rid of your property? Here's a simple solution. Donate it to TPR. Visit tpr.careasy.org/realestatedonation to learn more.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. This is a pre-recorded conversation with Ralph Young, author of American Patriots, A Short History of Dissent. But we are going to have a live in-person conversation on Wednesday, November 19th at Latuna Ice House at 5 p.m. We're going to be discussing patriotism and dissent. What does it mean to love and question your country? You can come early, grab a drink, join the conversation at this event that's going to be put on by The Source, and you can visit the Texas Public Radio Facebook page for more information. The thing that gets me, Ralph Young, about when we talk about these protest movements and these dissent efforts that have been successful in changing laws and policies in the United States, is that we resort to these shorthand ideas about how they became successful. You know, when we look at the movies and we watch about like Vietnam and they had these protests and they may play some Doors music as a montage and they'll show a couple of protests and things happen very quickly. And within a couple of minutes on screen, they have success and we pull out of Vietnam or something. But actually, protest and dissent is long, it's complicated, it's difficult, it takes a lot of discipline, and it's easily derailed, particularly now that we have such a sophisticated administration with lots of tools at their disposal in order to thwart those efforts. What do people need to know about what makes a successful dissent successful?
You know, dissenters, they tend to look at previous dissent movements and see, you know, what worked and what didn't work. And there are some ways of protesting that really do have an impact on people, and some ways that are, you know, just turn people off. And what the protesters are trying to do is to win converts to their cause. I remember I was once on a demonstration in 1969. I was in London where I was working on my PhD thesis, and there was a big anti-war demonstration at the American Embassy in Grosvenor Square. And this was a very sober, mindful kind of thing where people were marching around the square, and at, when they would get to the front of the American Embassy, the organizers had set up a coffin and gave each protester, you know, a 3x5 card with the name of an American soldier who was killed in Vietnam. And we read that name through a microphone they had set up and then placed the card in the coffin and just marched on. And, you know, I was there for several hours, and you kept circumnavigating this square. And that was a very mindful protest. There was no shouting, nothing like that. It was just and I think the protests like that are definitely have an impact on people.
Well, let me just pause it right there and say there are lots of things that can be accomplished by a protest like the one that you experienced. Mm-hmm. You have an opportunity, of course, to register your dissatisfaction with the government. That's probably mm-hmm. the primary purpose of the protest. But also, mm-hmm. you get to meet other people who have similar feelings and similar ideas. And it's very satisfying to know that you are not alone, that there are other people that feel exactly the way that you feel. You experience mm-hmm. speeches, and they are able to articulate what is happening and inform you of what is the policies and give you the language in order to speak up and defend and express yourself why this policy is so outrageous to you. When you're working in Congress in union with so many people, possibly singing songs, singing together is a way to really bring people together, inform people. There's a lot happening at a successful protest that really right. needs to be thought about as protests are assembled today. It's not just walking around marching, there needs to be more going on.
You know, when people are singing songs like "We Shall Overcome" or "All We Are Saying Is Give Peace a Chance," there is an energizing feeling of solidarity that you have with the other protesters. And when the protest is very mindful of all of this, I think it does have an impact on the people who are maybe on the fence, you know, not knowing whether should I support what these protesters are arguing for or should I oppose them. And so all of this is very important.
I mean, a lot of people today will say, I don't like what's happening in the country. I just mm-hmm. don't think going out and protesting is going to change anything. Mm-hmm. So what do you say to someone who suppresses themselves from participating in dissent?
Well, I mean, think of the protests that did have a big impact. When you think of Birmingham in 1963, when the police set the dogs on the demonstrators, and those images, you know, were shown in newspapers all around the world. And it certainly caused a lot of outrage on the part of people that, you know, these are people protesting against segregation. And they're being attacked by police dogs. The authorities are doing this.
And they're protesting because they've been denied the right to vote.
This is a very legitimate protest, and it was effective. It got President Kennedy to get on television and announce he was creating a Civil Rights Act and sending it to Congress, which was the act that Johnson signed into law in July of 1964.
Does it help to have a well-articulated mission statement explaining mm-hmm. why this protest is happening? Because frequently the criticism of anti-protesters is like, they don't even know what they're protesting against. They have no idea what's going on. But having people say, we're protesting this policy of mass deportation, we're protesting this policy of tariffs, whatever it is that you want to take down, or what's happening in Gaza, you know, but having articulated what do you want to see happen? What is the policy that you do want to see, not just the one that you're against?
Well, I think protesters do express that. They are having statements about this. Whether it's in a speech or, you know, some essay or an article that's written, or just a manifesto that might be delivered. I mean, so many of the protesters do that. Other ways of getting out the dissenting messages through music, and I think that one of the most effective means, when people are singing songs at a demonstration, whether they're, you know, union worker, workers on strike singing, Solidarity Forever, or peace, or civil rights demonstrators singing We Shall Overcome, or anti-war demonstrators singing, Give Peace a Chance. All of these are just ways of getting the message out. And also songs that are done by, songwriters that are not necessarily sung at demonstrations, but give a message. Like Bob Dylan's Masters of War, for example, or Phil Oakes' I Ain't Marching Anymore, or Buffy St. Marie's Universal Soldier. These are songs that, get a message out to people who maybe, they're wondering, what are these people protesting? And you can listen to a 90-minute speech, but listen to a three-minute song, and that song can have a much bigger impact than the speech can, because it says something very concisely.
So you were telling us you participated in the anti-war protest of the 60s, 70s. How does today compare to those times? We have people taking to the streets. The largest protest ever, apparently, we've been told, with anti-kings most recently.
Yeah.
How does that compare?
It does compare. And it's interesting that I happened to be, my wife and I went to New York on that Saturday. We were actually going up to see a play. And as we get to Times Square, the No Kings protest was beginning. And we wound up spending 3 hours in that protest. And it reminded me so much of protests that I was involved in the 1960s about Vietnam. And then it was also interesting, a journalist from France was interviewing us about the protests, and it suddenly struck me that it was almost exactly 50 years ago that I was in New York in 1975 and was involved in the war is over protest. It wasn't a protest. It was a celebration that the war in Vietnam had come to an end. It was this massive thing in Central Park with about 100,000 people. And it struck me that just 50 years later, I was sort of got involved in this No Kings protest in the same city. And it was very reminiscent. It almost like a bit of nostalgia in a way to... And it was invigorating. It was very hopeful to see all of these people, some of them wearing funny costumes, and so many of the signs that are, some of them are very humorous signs as
well. But a lot of people are carrying American flags, and they do want the patriot part of the protest up front. They're very much aware that they are fighting for traditional American values enshrined in the Constitution. That's something that a lot of people have on their mind. I mean, why aren't we thinking about these protests and patriotic isn't the first word that comes to mind?
Yeah. Well, it is the first word that comes to my mind. But, I guess a lot of people don't really understand how deeply embedded protest is in the American DNA. That this is something that we've basically were the first country to put that right into on paper in the Constitution, and we've kind of improved on it. We've kind of tweaked the whole idea of protest, and there's so many ways that people do it, through music, through art, through humor, through comedy, through so many ways. You know, it's not just a protest demonstration, but it's kind of a state of mind that people have, that, you know, we want the United States to be as perfect a union as we have aspired it to be. Well, and this is something that we really push for.
Ralph Young is the author of American Patriots, A Short History of Dissent. What does patriotism mean today? What does it mean to you? Is dissent a patriotic act? You can join me on Wednesday, November 15th at 5 p.m. at La Tuna Ice House for a community conversation that'll explore what it means to love and question your country and demand more of your country. Come early, grab a drink, join the conversation. This event is a part of The Source in the community, and you can visit the TPR Facebook page for more information. Ralph, thank you so much for talking to me today. I really appreciate it.
All right, thank you for having me.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.